This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 254, Red Solo Shots.
Happy Star Wars Day and welcome to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm happy to be in person today with friend co-host and all-around decent fella, Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael.
Hello, Michael. I'm a decent fellow.
Decent fellow.
A decent fellow on this Star Wars Day.
Useful, I would say, too. Useful is a good word.
Yeah, useful. If only they would know. But we won't tell you because that's secret behind-the-scenes stuff. And you'd have to be a supporter of our show at the $10,000 an episode level to get the detailed background.
I suppose so, yes. And there are relatively few of those. So, anywho... We got an action-packed, lightsaber-filled, X-Wing fighter-ish sort of show for you to hear today. And the thing that we're going to start off with is there will be absolutely no spoilers.
None.
Not even one.
Nope.
And most of that is because neither one of us has seen the film yet.
Well, but you're seeing it today.
I am. It's and with today being Friday, it's something I've been looking forward to. We got tickets when they first came out, so... early day out of school for the kiddos, and we're going to go and enjoy. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. But we will not have any spoilers now, and we will not share any spoilers after the fact either.
Yes. The first time we're allowed to do spoilers is 1 year from now.
Oh, is that when it is?
Yes.
I see. I didn't realize
that is my rule.
A spoiler.
Once it's out on Blu-ray or DVD or streaming services, you can do a spoiler.
I see. Because then it's okay. Because there's no excuse at that point.
Right. Well, I don't know. I might not get to see it anytime soon.
Oh, man. Well, you know, if you were, where were these things? They were in Australia, weren't they? If you were in Australia, you might be lucky enough to pick up a Coca-Cola bottle and be able to get a little flavor, so to speak, of the foam. No, that would be 7-Up.
That's right.
And that would
crisp and clean and no caffeine.
Or, gosh, where did that also show up? It showed up in Blue Harvest, didn't it?
Was it in Blue Harvest?
I think so. Where they had Jabba the Hutt say that. Yeah, exactly. Too funny. So it is a these super cool Coca-Cola bottles where the lightsabers of Kylo and Ray would actually light up when you squeeze the bottle just a smidge.
And you know, they need to rename those characters.
I'm
sorry, because Kylo Ren.
Yes.
And Ray.
Hey, no and spoilers.
So there you went. You went. You this is where my brain when you went with Kylo and Ray, and I was like, no, it's Ren. It's Ren. Kylo Ren.
So. And we're on a first name basis.
Oh, yeah. You and Kylo?
Yeah.
Like this.
Like that. You know, Mr. Me and I call him Meat. You know, other people have to say Meatloaf, but, you know, we're like that close.
Yes.
So I thought this was super cool.
Very
and
cool.
From an advertising perspective, one would expect to see things like this more frequently.
More coolness.
But I do worry about batteries, and I do worry about, you know, what goes into the waste stream, recycling, all that kind of good fun stuff here too. But
they could do They could do like solar powered lightsabers,
or maybe if you squeezed it, it
chemical
would be
reaction
force.
It could be a chemical reaction light.
It could be,
which means. Careful how you squeeze the bottle before you drink, because you don't want to be sucking down the red lightsaber.
Yeah, they do say, according to the article from Engadget, that these diodes that make up these lightsabers are eco-friendly, and there's not rare earth elements in them. And we all hope that's, in fact, the case. But it's super cool.
Friendly.
But
super cool.
Super cool.
Super cool is what happened... 30 years ago?
Yeah.
Roughly? Because I remember this.
You do?
I used to... I had some of it on an audio file.
You recorded it or something?
Well, I can't remember if I recorded or if I just had some of the audio rips years and years ago.
Yeah.
But this is the NPR edition of the Star Wars trilogy, the original episodes 4 through 6.
Yep.
4, 5, 6. Yep, 3 episodes. As a radio play.
Exactly.
Was it all the original cast?
No,
it was some.
Mark Hamill was on it, but there was a number of other people that weren't. So Yoda, for example, was not voiced by the actor from the films, a variety of others. But the fact that it was done as a radio play
was really cool.
Remember when they did Hitchhikers as well? Well, it was BBC that did Hitchhikers.
Yeah.
So very, very cool stuff. Inspired me in a major way around wanting to do radio and wanting to do things like this. I mean, yes. In high school, I really wanted to do more radio, and I know you got to do it in college.
I was on radio in high school.
Yeah. Oh, in high school,
yeah.
too? I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah.
I thought it was when
I started
when you got
my senior year in high school. I was the afternoon drive guy. I started off as the Sunday noon till sundown shift on WCOP AM 1350, which was an adult contemporary station. But when I started, the Sunday shift was NASCAR.
Oh.
So I literally got there and I would say, this is WCOP AM 1350 and now for NASCAR. And then for like 3 hours,
and you would just sit there. And
I would do my homework, and every once in a while, press a button to play a commercial. And at the top of the bottom of the hour, which was an FCC regulation at the time, I had to chime in. This is AM 1350 WCOP.
And just for the avoidance of doubt, this is not
AM 1350 WCOP. This is
GamesAtWork.biz.
Yes. I almost said the old one.
I know. That tends to happen.
Yes.
So this was super – this just took me back when I heard this article on NPR earlier this week. And one of the things that I really appreciated about hearing this story when it happened is that in this radio play, they did get it right. Han did shoot first. So, you know, just out of
So what you're saying is the canonical – story is represented as a radio play.
Not necessarily.
Sponsored by Blue Coal. if you've ever listened to the old Shadow, The Shadow.
Like The Shadow Knows The Shadow?
Yes.
Yes.
So I actually have some cassettes that were like recordings from the original Shadow radio.
Ooh.
And every episode was sponsored by Blue Coal. It burns blue.
And it's coal.
And it's coal. And you would buy blue coal in the 30s and 40s and put it in your house to warm your house because the finest blue coal.
Or you get it in your stocking if you haven't been exactly good.
Yes.
Yes. So interesting on way so many levels. We definitely should reference the Shadow Knows for our listeners that may be interested in 1950s radio plays.
40s, 50s, I think it was. Like somewhere I still have the cassettes.
Yeah. Now something a little more contemporary and a little more visual versus audio is a link that you found, and I found pretty intriguing myself, around China showing off how detailed they can be with their satellite imagery.
Yeah, this one really blew me away because I remember, early 2000s, there was a company called Teradata. That was the first one that allowed you to look at satellite imagery of the Earth. And, you know, it was kind of cool because I'd go back and I'd zoom in and look at, you know, the house I grew up in Germany and then zoom in California, et cetera, and just kind of look around the Earth. And then, of course, you know, I think Microsoft ultimately bought Teradata.
Yeah.
And then Google came out with Google Earth and Google Maps and all that stuff.
Sure.
And the resolution of those was okay, but you couldn't really see detail. And what this is, these new satellite launches from China are actually able to, at the satellite level,
right,
make out individual people.
Well, wait a second. Satellite level.
Satellite level. Individual
people.
In 3D.
So if you have a series of terrestrial cameras, you know, on street corners, shops, etc., and you've got satellites that are all, say, networked, you know, together, you might be able to use a little geolocation magic and pinpoint a particular individual.
Yes. If you've watched, Enemy of the State?
Oh, yeah.
The movie, right? And all... you know, kind of the spy thriller movies that have been around for a while, you would see, you know, the satellites zoom in and they all get all the way down and read the license plate.
Yes.
Right?
Can't read the license plate yet, but you can now identify enough of the person that the handoff between satellite level imagery and local imagery can be seamless.
Wow. Enhance would be the...
Yes. In the TV episode or movie would be like, zoom, enhance, enhance, enhance. Ah, it's Fred.
Yes. And what's he eating there? Oh, it looks like a Big Mac.
Oh, I was thinking a burrito. But yeah, so the technology, as always, keeps getting better. And now, and what really caught my eye on this, besides all the, you know, scare tactics that we just talked about, was really the images of just kind of the beauty that you see from these images of the city layout, et cetera. And I don't read Mandarin or other Chinese languages, so I can't tell exactly what they're describing in those three images at the top of the story. But I really think the third one is the coolest.
Yeah, the airport.
Is that the airport?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the airport. You know.
Yeah, I don't recognize which particular airport that is, but you can see all the terminals and planes and all that kind of good fun stuff.
Very, very cool.
Especially if you enhance.
Enhance. Zoom. Enhance. Zoom, enhance. Rotate. Enhance. Well, that's enhancing.
I remember, too, a couple of years ago, there was a company that would produce city maps that kind of were like this. That you could buy, frame and buy, and, you know, have various cities along these lines and, you know, highlight the roads that you might be on. So this is certainly much more detailed than from what I remember.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Now, if we zoom in really to a teensy tiny level.
Teeny tiny.
So satellite up here, way down here to the ground. We love talking about bots and droids and robots and things like that. And we've talked about insectoids kind of things before,
yeah.
You know, little teeny tiny little robots. This one that you found was super interesting because they have a little fly swatter and they try to squish it and it pops back up and keeps on.
Yeah. Picking. So this is that's the part that really caught me on this because we've talked about many different robots at the. At the insect level and kind of this, you know, swarming technology and right. The really cool things you can do. But, you know, you can swat them because they tend to be fragile. Well, now they have a little bit better survivability.
Yeah, well, it looks like it's basically squishable, right? So it can take a swat onto a hard surface. And I guess for me, this is not entirely surprising, but it's a useful capability to have because out in the wild – little bots this size are going to encounter environmental challenges, and it would be better for them to be able to keep on ticking as opposed to go, oops, that one's broken.
Well, what I'm glad is it's not flying. This is a crawling robot.
Yeah.
So just think of it as a roach.
Well, some of those fly too.
I know.
And those are scary.
I don't like them. But it's what I also find really interesting about most of these types of stories, right? If we look at it from a story angle, is they tend to expose the guts of the robot, right?
Right.
So whatever shell or disguise you might put on it to make it less obvious if you're like sending it in for an observation. Let's call it an observation.
An observation?
Observation.
So like
spy work. Craft work. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
They probably wouldn't look like this. They would probably look like a roach.
And you know, and that would never attract any attention at all, would it?
Depends on the area that you're saying it in.
You know, so if I were doing that, I would create...
It would be crushed.
No. If I were designing one of these, it would be super... interesting to say, okay, yeah, it looks like a bug, and you squish it, and it's there, and it oozes out some stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And then it just sits there.
It sits there, listening.
Still observing.
The maybe, roach that listened.
Maybe it goes into the trash and listens in the trash. Who knows?
But, again, the survivability, we're getting better. The miniaturization, we're getting better. And now, take that, you know, into other technology. Because a lot of, you know, digital devices that we have now are still not very survivable in a harsh environment.
Sure.
So.
But if you wanted to survive in a harsh environment and you wanted to do much more than that, and you wanted to be able to travel over large distances, not just little teensy ones like these bugs, these insectoids, You may want to have it fly, and you may want to have it have some decent range on it too. So that brings us to another example of what's happening in the travel and transportation industry that you saw from Elroy.
Yeah, this one I really found interesting because of the logistics aspect, right? Because mm-hmm. we're talking about a VTOL or a vertical takeoff and landing vehicle that is now able to not only carry, you know, pretty decent cargo, about 300 pounds, pretty good distance, 300 miles,
right.
But also it has the ability to do self-pickup. So it can actually grasp the cargo, so get over it, grasp it, take off, fly it to a distance, land,
deposit it,
and rinse and repeat. Mm. So for moving decent amount of equipment at about 300 pounds each trip, this becomes really, really powerful. I can see, obviously, I'll say military applications. I'm also thinking rescue applications, other civil infrastructure applications,
right.
In such a way that we can and think of a swarm of these. You can move a lot of cargo in a short period of time in hazardous environments without human intervention.
And if you included a little bit of what we've talked about in the past, too, about self-assembly, you know, you could essentially drop a factory somewhere that could self-assemble the factory, which could then in turn generate more.
Go back, read Damon from, God, when was that? 5-8 years ago?
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Very, 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 very cool.
Yeah,
So once you've moved all this cargo in the large distances, mm-hmm. you might have a whole stack of this cargo, and you might want to put it in a pickup truck?
Sure. Because you want to move it around. So what, Michael, you're referencing is a article.
Okay, it was a lame reference. I'm trying to connect it.
Yeah, it worked.
I give you all these softballs.
you certainly are. It's, we've talked quite a bit in the last couple of shows around the design language for the new Tesla Cybertruck. And that's inspired a number of people around the world to reference that same kind of angular design pattern.
Lego.
Yeah.
Right? The Lego truck was awesome.
Exactly. I mean, they weren't quite as angular. I mean, they could have been.
Oh, they were very angular.
They had some sharp edges and 90 degree kind of stuff. So this one caught my eye because they called it a cyber bunker. And it's designed to be a solar generation station for the cyber truck. So you could plop it in.
Generation station, what's your function? Yeah, no, that didn't quite work.
There's something in there, though, that's kind of like that.
There's a little click.
Yeah, electric company thing. I don't
know.
So the neat bit was just how it, as a design language, reflected the way the truck looks. And the fact that this could be a self-sustaining environment somewhere, as well as the notion of this kind of environment being a place to live. So it doesn't have to be a garage. It could actually be a place that is providing electricity for the household consumption itself. And, you know, fun fact, I was at a holiday party this past weekend, and I had the conversation with the person who had the party because they turned their garage into additional party space. So had some couches set up in there, you know, draped little, you know, white twinkly lights and made some softer ceiling stuff. So you didn't see the garage opener up on top. It felt a little, you know, like Bedouin-y a little. So, you know, you were happy to be in there. And the thought that I had was in the future, where your car can go off somewhere and go replenish its electrical charge. And then
or replenish
you,
the beer.
Or replenish the beer. And then come back to get you when it's time to get you. A little bit like the Elroy Air example.
300 pounds of beer. Maybe some wine.
You don't need to have a garage to
be a garage only.
Be a garage for your vehicle. It could be additional living space. It could be something else. And as we move more and more to autonomous vehicles, I can see where there's going to be an enormous business there about what do you do with your garage now that you can summon the vehicle you need when you need it.
Yeah, so this is interesting because my brain goes to my car has always been in the garage. I don't leave the car outside. You know, cars are big investments.
They are.
I do not like green eggs and ham. No, I do not like riding in somebody else's car. I like to drive my car. I don't want other people driving my car. So I'm not probably the typical user for a ride hailing service.
No.
Whether or not it's, you know, Tesla had the thing we talked about a year ago where they were announcing the ability to take your new Tesla and sign it up for a ride hailing service. So when you're not using it, other people could use it and pay you for part of the usage. My thing is, no, I don't want that. I don't want that at all. I understand using the space, but I use the space for my car. I like the idea for a party, maybe moving everything out. But it's
I know, and we're different. So we know and we have experiences that are going to be well different from others. So got it. Understand that perspective. But as the technology changes, as it becomes more ubiquitous and available for autonomous vehicles to be out there, it's easy for me to see that people are going to buy a transportation service as opposed to possessing vehicles and maintaining and depreciating and all that kind of good fun stuff.
And I see this as a valid option for others.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't say it was for you. Let's go get started today.
Let's do it. Let's do it. That's
awesome.
But I do like the design language.
I don't.
Not for the car, but for the house.
It looks a little bit better. And I the house portion or the garage portion of it makes a little more sense to me just in terms of aerodynamics. You know, being in a place in the world where you do have hurricanes, I kind of like the idea of being lower and not having sails and stuff.
Well, the other thing, it actually reminds me of a lot of the design languages of houses that were, quote, modern in the 60s and early 70s.
Yeah, the geodesic dome kind of things. The dome. The domes. So, more Back to the Future stuff to move to the next article that we've got. And this one will be one that I think a number of people, friends of the show, will welcome with open arms. And that apparently HBO is going to be starting a series based on Snow Crash. And Snow Crash, for those who don't know, is one of those cyberpunk novels by Neal Stephenson that has predicted a number of things that have come to pass or are about to come to pass or are still in the very near-term horizon. And as storytelling goes, boy, this is going to be an intriguing way to render it visually in the TV medium as opposed to just the words on the written page and lifting it from there. So I'm excited to see this, and I can't wait to understand where they're going to take it and what stories they're going to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember the kind of the two camps of this, right? There was the Neal Stephenson Snow Crash fans and the William Gibson Necronomicon fans. And, you know, as I read both the books way back in the day and have read them within the last few years again, I've slowly switched between which one I like more.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I'll let you decide which one it is.
It's both. And you read them in the garage.
In the garage, in my Cybertruck.
So our next article, because the one we just talked about from HBO, the Snow Crash is going to be done as a streaming service.
Yes.
Which is another interesting thing that says, hey, if you really want to watch The Mandalorian, if you really want to watch this, sign up for our streaming service. And this article just was like, ah, because if I paused my streaming service to go do something for a minute, you know, cook up some burritos or whatever, now there's an innovation that will continuously bombard me with ads while I'm paused.
Yeah, this is the one. It just killed me. I saw this. I was utterly amazed. It's like you're paying for the service because you don't want the ads.
Right.
You're also paying because there's certain content. But in general, you're paying for a service because you don't want the ads. And the way they're going to make it more valuable is during pause, they're going to play ads. And if I read the article correctly, turn on the audio. So you can hear those ads as you walk into the other room to nuke your burrito.
Oh.
So it's like, you have got to be kidding me. So full video ads with sound. begins playing on your screen when you hit pause.
Holy schmoly. I didn't even catch that. Because, you know, the volume kicks up in some cases during the ads.
Exactly. And so they figure you're already a higher value customer because you're willing to pay for this service instead of just getting either over the air or basic cable. But because you're using a streaming service, that the whole value of the streaming service is you can binge watch and see things without being bombarded by commercials.
So I guess the whole point here is don't pause.
Don't pause. Just binge
watch.
Never
pause.
And actually, there's another service that has announced that they're going to take, and I can't remember if it was Hulu. I think it was Hulu. They're going to take and tune the commercials during binge watching events because they do commercials between shows.
Right.
So that instead of seeing the same commercial over and over again because you're paying for the service and they kind of target those ads based off of what you're watching, they're going to learn other behavior and use that to tune and switch commercials between binge watching events. So now take these two together and it's like you're paying for services to watch TV or watch shows without commercials. And not only will you get commercials when you stop watching, but between events, you're going to get customized commercials because you deserve to get the value of the commercials that you're paying for.
I'd rather the commercials pay me to watch them. So, I mean, we need to start flipping this model on its head here.
Yeah. It
yeah, I was in.
We are going to the world that was foretold in Snow Crash and all these other things, Minority Report, where you cannot get away from the commercial.
Yeah. Well, and I remember, there's no way I can find it, but I remember we had one component of one show that we did about augmented reality ads every which way.
Yeah.
And it was like on your kitchen counter. It was on the screen in your car. It was everywhere, everywhere.
That's the Minority Report nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. So crazy, crazy. All right, we are nearly at time, but we've got a couple other things to hit. And
Just some quick hits.
So one of them is something that I'd love to try, and maybe over the holidays I will. It's called AI Dungeon 2. And the shtick on AI Dungeon 2 is that you're essentially interacting with a dungeon master that is an artificial intelligence, and you can do whatever wacky, crazy kind of stuff that you might want to do. So it's not like, you know, go left, open door, pick up hammer. Sure, you can do those sort of things. But from my read of this article, and I'll leave you to it, you can go and interact and do things like start a rock band, raise the dead, have them join your rock band and play arena shows. And this, you know, was not something the developers of the app coded in. But apparently the AI was sophisticated enough to figure this stuff out and make it part of the storyline. Wacky.
Wacky-do.
Another wacky-do. Well, maybe not.
Well, if you're gaming.
If you're gaming, you want to be comfortable and you want to be in your hyper-performance mode. This just fell out of the sky for me. For the mere $160, you could drop on a pair of
$160.
Was it Australian?
It's only $110 US.
Yeah, so it's cheaper than that.
Oh, it's so much cheaper.
Look at the bargain. So $110 US, you can get a pair of gaming socks from Puma, and you could wear them and
while gaming, because you can't wear them when you're not gaming. You got to take them off. Yeah. These are gaming socks.
That's what I would do.
So when I look at these and when I think about what gaming socks would actually be, if there's going to be any real value to them, they're probably compression footies. Because you're going to let all the blood flow to your feet while you're sitting there gaining that long. You got to get the blood to come back out.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, these look like great shoes to be on a mat, you know, if you're going to do wrestling or judo or things like that. And they say they're designed for indoor and arena usage. And they say gamers can adapt to different gaming modes and game their best. So I'm not sure
because exactly of their socks.
How they're
adapting?
Socks adapting, you know, maybe. Maybe the future state is, you know, back to those shoelaces that expand and contract based upon, you know, your blood.
Maybe they're haptic
pressure,
and they pulse when you get shot, which would help in the compression sock.
Yeah, I don't know. but hats off or socks off to Puma
for some convincing people to spend $110 US on socks.
All right. So closing out for closing this particular episode, Michael, you and I both had a couple of games to share with the wide world.
Yes.
Things that we're interested in. So for me,
yes.
I have two that I'm going to focus on.
Yes.
So the first one I'm going to mention only briefly because I've not played either, but I'm really excited to do so. Red Dragon Inn is a game that came highly recommended to me and my fam to check it out. A little Dungeon Master-esque here too. Its gameplay is all around. You are coming back as your party from your dungeon raids, and you are arriving at the tavern, and you're going to interact with your fellow mates there, gamble a little bit, have a little bit to drink, and you want to survive with, I guess, the most money and not pass out and be under the table.
Okay.
So it sounds kind of fun. Who knows? Second that I'm excited about, too, is the winner of the 2019 game Spiel des Jahres. It's the German award that they do, and this is the Kennerpreis, right? So this is like the more specific, you know, games for gamers kind of thing. It's called Wingspan.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that like birds and bird watching, or just like super cool wooden pieces of games and dice and awesome
tactile
artwork
feel.
And
yeah.
stuff like that, this game is probably right up your alley. It's not available immediately. I think they've sold out of a couple of printings of it because people are so excited about it. And I'm eager to get a set for myself and for my family. So the next time we're all together with like 6 and 8 and 10 of us, we'll give it a go. So
yeah. And my game that I was really looking forward to playing over the holidays, I actually got this as a pre-buy birthday gift this year.
Ooh.
And it was supposed to be available in December. And I was like, yes.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. And it has now been pushed into January due to software development issues. It is Warcraft 3 Reforged. So for all those people who like the whole StarCraft, Warcraft, real-time strategy games, this is Warcraft 3 completely re-skinned and designed for modern computers, new graphics, high
shadows.
Res, real, shadowing, everything, beautiful.
Water ripples.
Unfortunately, it's not going to be played over the holidays because they had a few quality issues and decided to hold off until January. But I love Warcraft.
I know you do.
The real-time strategy one. I was a big fan of StarCraft. So I'm really looking forward to when this will be released and I can have some fun playing with it.
That'll be awesome. And it'll be interesting to see how quickly the AI, you know, teams start to go after this one as they have with StarCraft too. So
yep.
I think that'll be
well
neat to see too.
My basic understanding is it's the same gameplay
mm-hmm.
just brought to modern. So
got it.
So
hope there more UI updates.
Lots of UI updates.
Okay, okay.
Huge amount of UI updates. Mm-hmm. So
awesome.
Cool.
All right. Well, folks, we covered a lot of ground today. We talked about Star Wars. We talked about games. We talked about bots. We talked about AI. We talked about
some work,
you know,
you know, games, some work, a little this, a little that.
Talk about coffee, dogs. So tune in, listen in, give us some your thoughts. We're happy to see your links flowing into us as well. And be sure to catch us here next time on
GamesAtWork.biz,
not the radio station.
Yes.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.